Going to the Jew First. This is the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. I'm Aaron Broughton, your host for today, and I want to thank you for tuning in. With me today in studio is Mr. Ron Plott, one of the workers here with IBJM. Ron and I actually go back several years working together in Jewish missions. And Ron, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Good to see you again.
Thank you. One of the things that you've been involved in is reaching out to local churches by providing what we call a Jewish evangelism seminar. Now, this is a vital tool for churches, but can you explain to us what this actually is?
Yes. You know, we were full-time in Israel, and then when we came back, we wanted to continue reaching out. And yeah, I've been told that America technically is the largest field of Jewish people in that sense, over 6.5 million, depending on how you define who is Jewish. But I noticed that even though there's a lot of churches here in America and many are burdened and have an interest, most of them say, well, we know our Jewish neighborhood is over here, but we don't know what to do and we don't know how to do it. So the Lord really burdened me not only to go into Jewish communities and share the good news, but to help local churches go in, because the Great Commission is through the local church. Of course, every church should have a program where they assist people going into the foreign field, but we cannot neglect our own Judea, so to speak. The town I live in, my pastor calls our town our Jerusalem. I think that's appropriate. But the Jewish people in our community is our Judea in that sense, if we could use that analogy. And we need to go to them because very few will come to us, if any. And so our burden is to train local churches with this Jewish evangelism seminar. What we do is we'll have anywhere from a one-day to three-day conference where we train the local people how to present the gospel in a way that the Jewish people can receive and understand. A lot of Jewish people see the gospel as a Gentile religion. It's not. Jesus was a Jewish man. Of course, the Son of God came from heaven, and he presented himself to the nation of Israel. He said, go only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel initially before he said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And so we need to put the gospel in that context. Jesus is Jewish. The message is Jewish. And as the Jewish scriptures say, whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. And what we do is we train the church how to present the gospel. For example, we have a session on presenting the Romans Road from the Old Testament. We all know the Romans Road, or we should, but can you have accompanying verses from the Old Testament? If a Jewish person says, I reject the New Testament, okay, let me give you this, the same points as from the book of Romans, just using scriptures from the Tanakh, the Old Testament. And of course, we teach Jewish terminology such as Tanakh instead of Old Testament. We want to remove as many barriers and make it as, we don't want the culture to offend them. It's the gospel itself is the stumbling block. Jesus is the stumbling block. We shouldn't make it a Gentile obstacle in that sense of letting culture get in the way. And after we teach you how to present the gospel from the Old Testament, we also teach you how to answer Jewish objections. Of course, they've had 2,000 years to object to this, and some of their objections can be very hard to explain. Some are subjective, such as, why would God allow the Holocaust? Or, you know, we don't believe in the Trinity of God. If Jesus is God, why isn't he mentioned in the Old Testament? All these can be answered, and you know, we need to be able to give an answer to those who ask of the hope that lie within us. So we do that, and so many other subjects. So by the time you finish this seminar, and of course, we provide you with materials. We have a free booklet on How to Win the Jew, as well as Dr. Gardenhouse's classic book, Winning Jews to Christ, which I think every Christian should have in their library. And so through all of this, it can equip you to present the gospel effectively to the Jewish people.
Amen. Well, wonderful to have you in today to talk about this. And if you're out there and you would like to have Ron in your church or one of our other workers here at IBJM, we invite you to contact us at 423-876-8150 or go online to ibjm.org for more information. Now, with that in mind, let's now go to our Bible study today with our teacher and Jewish believer, Brother Mark Oshman.
Thank you for tuning in to our radio Bible studies. We will begin a brief examination of the Epistle to the Galatians. This is part one of a two-part series. Paul and Barnabas planted churches throughout the region of Galatia during their first missionary journey, as recorded in the 14th chapter of the book of Acts. In the 16th chapter of that book, Paul and his entourage passed through Galatia again. On yet a later missionary journey, Paul went through Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening the disciples there. Since the apostle spent considerable time and effort ministering in the region of Galatia, he had a personal interest in the spiritual welfare of the believers in that area. In the 15th chapter of Acts, visitors to the church in Antioch argued that Gentile Christians needed to receive circumcision and to keep the law of Moses. Paul and Barnabas sharply contended against these individuals, who were known as Judaizers. In his epistle to the Galatians, Paul advanced similar arguments against those who promoted such notions amongst the Galatian Christians. In the epistle to the Galatians, Paul employed very strong language in the defense of the gospel and his ministry. Quote, "O foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you? You should not obey the truth," unquote. In connection with false teachers, the apostle proclaimed, "I would they were even cut off, which trouble you," unquote. Apart from 2 Corinthians, no other Pauline epistle displayed Paul's zeal for his calling. One of the main themes Paul developed in Galatians is that of justification by faith. Perhaps the most important exposition of that doctrine occurred in the second chapter of Galatians. Quote, "Knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ, that we might be justified by the faith of Christ, and not by the works of the law. For by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified." Unquote. Paul thereby argued that Jesus Christ's fulfillment of the Old Covenant's provision served as the basis for a Christian salvation. In the opening verse of Galatians, Paul affirmed his unique calling. He wrote of himself as, quote, "Paul, an apostle, not of men, neither by man, but by Jesus Christ and God the Father who raised him from the dead," unquote. Paul pronounced the curse on anyone, human or angelic, that would preach a different gospel from that which he proclaimed. He had received his gospel message as a direct revelation from Jesus Christ. No one had added anything to his message or taken anything away from his message. The apostle briefly recounted his pre-salvation experiences. He noted that he had previously persecuted Christians based upon his zeal for Judaism. Furthermore, he, quote, "profited in the Jews' religion above many my equals in mine own nation," unquote. However, once God's grace touched him, Paul refused to confer with others about the Christian faith. Instead of initially going to meet the other apostles in Jerusalem, Paul went to Arabia and Damascus. Only after 3 years had passed did he journey to Jerusalem to meet Peter. The 9th chapter of Acts might have indirectly alluded to that particular encounter. Paul noted that the believers in Judea only heard about his reputation at that time, having never met him personally. Luke's commentary in Acts chapter 9 pointed out that those disciples initially feared Paul, refusing to believe that he had indeed become a Christian. Upon hearing about Paul's conversion, though, they glorified God in him. 14 years afterward, Paul and Barnabas again traveled to Jerusalem. This visit was recorded in the 15th chapter of Acts, and probably related to the efforts of those Judaizers in Galatia and Antioch who sought to subvert the gospel of grace. At that time, Paul communicated his message to the apostles in Jerusalem, Peter, James, and John, the chief men among the early believers. Peter, James, and John extended the right hand of fellowship to Paul and Barnabas. They did not require him to alter the substance of his message, nor did they insist that Titus, who was Paul's Gentile co-worker, that Titus receive circumcision. Though Paul recognized the apostolic authority of the men mentioned above, he did not act subserviently toward them. Indeed, on one occasion, he publicly rebuked Peter for an act that suggested that Peter had a double standard in connection with Christian fellowship. Peter had no qualms about eating with Gentiles. However, when a group of Hebrew believers arrived, Peter separated himself from his Gentile companions. His action resulted in other Hebrew Christians, such as Barnabas, following his example. Paul reacted to this affront by telling Peter, quote, "If thou, being a Jew, livest after the manner of Gentiles, and not as the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles to live as do the Jews?" Unquote. Paul used that incident to launch into the heart of his treatise. Justification in the sight of God comes by faith. The Mosaic law cannot and did not provide an alternative means for a person to live uprightly before God. How did the apostle regard the law? He utilized it as a means of his dying unto it. As he put it, quote, "I through the law am dead to the law, that I might live unto God," unquote. Paul's account in Romans chapter 7 detailed the futility he experienced in attempting to observe the Mosaic precepts. According to the law, therefore, God laid a curse upon Paul. Paul had to die, metaphorically, if not indeed physically. Paul had to die to remove that malediction. Paul accomplished that deed through his identification with Jesus Christ in the atoning death of the Savior. As Paul put it in his famous statement, quote, "I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me," unquote. He continued, quote, "The life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me," unquote. If obeying the law could convey righteousness upon an individual, then God had no need to send Jesus Christ to the cross. Paul opened chapter 3 of Galatians by defending his gospel of grace. He asked the Galatian Christians a series of rhetorical questions. Quote, "Received ye the Spirit by the works of the law, or by the hearing of faith?" Unquote. Quote, "Are ye so foolish? Having begun in the Spirit, are ye now made perfect in the flesh?" Unquote. Quote, "Have ye suffered so many things in vain?" Unquote. As he did in the book of Romans, Paul cited Abraham as an example of a person who lived a life of faith. He quoted from Genesis 15, where the record indicated that Abraham attained righteousness by believing in God. In Genesis 12, God had promised Abraham that all nations would be blessed through him. Paul posited that through Jesus Christ, Gentiles, as well as Jews, can partake of Abraham's blessings through faith. According to Deuteronomy 27, God cursed any Jew who transgressed against his law. Therefore, those who subject themselves to the Mosaic law must remain accursed, since all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. However, Paul wrote that, quote, "Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree," unquote. By the way, the latter portion of this passage can be found in Deuteronomy chapter 21. Paul employed this expression to drive home this point. Jesus Christ's atonement removed God's judgment on sin by Jesus Christ taking that judgment upon himself. The apostle made a similar argument in the 5th chapter of 2 Corinthians, emphasizing that Jesus Christ not only bore the sins of the world when he hung on the cross, Jesus Christ actually had become sin. Through that transaction, God made it possible for the entire human race to attain divine righteousness. We've come to the end of this lesson. Please join us for the second part of our survey of Paul's epistle to the Galatians.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.